Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field. We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show.
All right, here we go. Podcast episode number one.
Here we are.
We are starting off with an introductory episode in which I'm going to ask you some questions and you're going to ask me some questions, and I think we're going to have some fun with this.
Yeah.
We wanted to start a little bit just talking about who Performance Baseball is and who we are. So let's just start there. Where are we located? What is Performance Baseball, and what are we all about as an organization?
Yeah, Performance Baseball is nestled right in Edmond, Oklahoma, smack dab in the middle of the country. I love Edmond because it's just such a great atmosphere to host, you know, youth sports, especially the baseball realm. It's highly competitive. So that's where we're located.
I moved up here a couple of years ago from North Texas. And I had no idea what the baseball scene was going to be like up here.
Yeah.
I have to say, I was really pleasantly surprised at how high level baseball there is up here in Oklahoma compared to Dallas, Fort Worth. So coming from Dallas, that's a mecca of youth sports.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of quantity, but that does not necessarily mean there's a lot of good quality.
Sure.
And I think the quality of baseball is better up here than in Dallas. I noticed it right off the bat when we joined our local rec league here at the level of competition and the skills that the boys had even at 8 years old.
Yeah.
I was blown away because we had been competing in Dallas and it was much lower, and we were in one of the best leagues in that area in Frisco. And then from there, tournament play and all of that, a double A team up here is quite a bit better than a double A team in Dallas. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And my background, I'm from San Diego, and when I stepped out here, I came out here for college, and I initially understood that, hey, Midwest baseball, or I guess South, or however you want to visualize Oklahoma, because kind of on that border. But I mean, the quality of baseball is just unreal out here. It's highly competitive all throughout, and then I think the way that tournament baseball is kind of going is it's becoming very, very, very competitive. I mean, just the level of play, Performance Baseball, we started in 2022. Back when we started, it was pretty competitive. But I feel like over the last, 3 years that we've been in business with Performance Baseball, it's just exploded. And now everybody is just or at least a lot of the teams are just very high caliber teams. And they're developing players at a much faster rate. And it's definitely starting to separate out, just some really quality players.
I've seen that too.
Yeah.
So you said you started Performance Baseball in 2022.
Yeah.
How many teams did you start with, and where are you at? Where are we at now?
Yeah. So Performance Baseball, first off, we're a training facility. The original business is Riley Sports Performance. That's just me and my wife. We started that business, and we house a lot of baseball lessons, instructors, and then I actually had a couple parents approach me on, hey, have you ever thought about having teams? And it was actually two dads that they worked together, and they kind of just planted that seed. My wife and I thought about it, and it was just kind of intimidating. We didn't really know much about tournament baseball, but those two parents just kind of, asked us, planted that seed, and we said, hey, let's go for it. So we actually started with two teams in 2022, and we quickly learned.
And what age group was that?
So we were at, I believe, so they're 14, so Yeah, they would be on the board of 11U. So one was 11U and one was 7U.
Oh, okay.
So 7U and 11U, you know, teams always come and go, but like our 7U is actually our 10U team right now. Mm-hmm. They've stayed together. We've been able to develop them and, you know, getting to know them over these last years. And actually this season we kick off with 11 teams. So we quickly grew from two teams to 11 teams. You know, it's always running a program is always fun because it's constantly evolving. You find ways to make the program better or things that we need to subtract. And from there, like, here we are, 11 teams.
Yeah. And so I am the coach of two of those teams.
Yeah. Yes.
I coach another 10U team. So we have two 10U teams mm-hmm. now. And then an 8U team as well. And so the 8U team is the youngest team in the organization. And it's a fun group. You know, that's definitely a level where you are teaching all of the concepts of baseball, the fundamentals,
yeah.
you know, the strategy.
And like the life lessons, approach, too.
The life lessons, all yeah. of that, yeah. It really you are starting from not a whole lot with 8U, so but I enjoy that. I enjoy that process.
Yeah.
So you said that you started with two teams. You're up to 11 now, and you've learned some things as far as how best to develop players, and even some things that you've had to subtract. What are some of those lessons that you've learned along the way?
I mean, honestly, the biggest lesson that I've learned personally is, I mean, now I'm a dad too, but patience, always having patience with athletes, understanding that everyone is at a different walk of life. So it's definitely one of those things that you just continually have to remind yourself and remind the coaches around you that, you know, even though we want to be, you know, competitive and we want to compete with, you know, any player that we step on the field with, but like, when we're working on specific skill sets, you know, patience is a huge part of that. As far as the program, adding and subtracting, we haven't subtracted a whole lot. However, the adding is now that we're at multiple age groups, our, like Adam said, our youngest age is 8U, and we work all the way up to 16U, is kind of modifying some of the programs. So, like, all of our teams have skill development nights, you know, weekly. Our older teams, they'll actually have team workouts. We'll be, you know, lifting weights and doing some more arm care with that. So distinguishing the different avenues for the different age groups, I think that was the additions to the program. And, you know, it's like I said, it's always evolving, and our goal is just continue adding to it.
So, like, figuring out what's appropriate at what age,
yeah.
and how to engage in, you know, responsible growth mm-hmm. that
yeah.
isn't going to hurt young arms or young bodies, but yeah. will help them grow and improve.
Yeah. 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 I mean, as far as like, you know, the learning curve to it, when we started with two teams, I mean, we had no idea what we were doing.
Yeah.
We had no idea. It's just like anything. When you jump in something new, you have no idea, but you quickly learn the ropes. I mean, some of the behind the scenes stuff, like learning uniform, you know, ordering uniforms. Hey, instead of us handling all the orders, hey, let's put it on the website and have some of the, you know, the behind the scene programs kind of run the ordering from there. So collecting all the data, but
getting those systems up and
yeah,
running.
Getting the yeah. systems. Yeah, I think the biggest thing is establishing systems, establishing just a flow of what the program looks like, being consistent across the board. That's a big thing, is being consistent, and then from there, just listening to the audience, listening to. What people enjoy and what people don't enjoy, and quickly rolling with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what would you say are some of the values of performance baseball? Like what are the goals? What are you trying to accomplish? And what would you say is like the philosophy of performance baseball?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest goal behind performance baseball is giving the players the resources they need to succeed. That's pretty much like what we initiated with performance baseball and our gym side of things with Riley Sports Performance, is giving everyone the resources they need to succeed. As far as more of the philosophies and vision, it's more so just controlling the controllables. So your attitude and your effort. That's what I love. So I coach a 13U team, one of our 13U teams, and that's one of my biggest philosophies that I love pushing them is control the controllables and then kind of evolve and adapt to the uncontrollables. So your attitude, your efforts, you can always control that. But as far as anything outside of that, I mean, we just got to roll with the punches and go from there.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pretty good overview of what performance baseball is. I will say on my team, we definitely talk a lot on my teams, I should say. We talk a lot about attitude, effort, and my philosophy kind of revolves around three words: believe, trust, win. And that those three words kind of stand for some positive self-talk that I want my players to be incorporating into their routines, whether they're on the field or at the plate. And so that is, I believe in myself, I trust my teammates, and I will win the next pitch. So it's not necessarily win the game, but like when stuff goes wrong, mm-hmm. when you boot a ball, whatever it might be, like we're going to pick ourselves back up, be resilient, and win the next pitch. And then that attitude and effort builds belief in yourself and builds trust in your teammates. It's all kind of connected for me. That's kind of what I talk about with my teams.
Yeah, like positive self-talk is a huge aspect, especially with youth athletes. By the time they get to high school, some athletes start to understand that how valuable positive self-talk is. But like establishing, that's great, Adam, that you're instilling that with your young athletes, because that's probably the biggest battle. Yeah, it's not all about winning. Yeah. It's about setting them up for success in the long run.
I've seen so many teams with my oldest son and my second son who had all the talent in the world, but then couldn't get out of their heads. And so, when you're trying to be really competitive in a tough game late on a Sunday and at a tournament, like a lot of times one mistake leads to another, which leads to another. And then you've got a 6-run inning that, you could have prevented. And it's like, that they've got that in that potential in them. And it's tough when you see it all just kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
And so, that's kind of what I'm trying to. So I have 4 boys. And so my 2 youngest are who I'm coaching now. And so that's what I'm trying to kind of get out in front of at a young age is, can we build those mental skills at an early age that will help them be resilient when it comes time to really be competitive later on?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it's not all about winning games. Like no 8U or 10U or 11U player is going to win a scholarship, to university next year. It really baseball does matter. Like, having those accomplishments do matter, but at the end of the day, we want them to be set up for success.
Yeah.
AU baseball, it does matter, but winning, no one's going to remember.
For different reasons.
One's going to remember your record. They want to know how are you going to develop and how you're going to adjust.
But that's absolutely awesome. Yeah. All right. So I wanted to start by getting into a little bit of your history and how you came to kind of dream of this performance baseball organization, but a little bit of your baseball background too. So when did you start playing baseball?
Man, I started playing baseball back as soon as I could walk. So I'm 1 of 5 and I'm the second youngest. So I have a sister that's 9 years older than me. So, I mean, we were on baseball, softball all the time. I don't know how they did it. I think we talked about that earlier, but like, I don't know how my parents juggled schedules, but I was always at the field. My dad was pretty much coaching all of us, at some point in our time. So,
what did he do for a living?
He was self-employed. He did a construction, but he was always able to, be at our games, at our practices. He didn't have high level playing, experience, but he was a student of the game. Mm-hmm. So he learned through all those different seasons, learned through reading, coaching books, all that stuff. And I mean, he was a great coach and kind of instilled everything I knew about baseball.
That's coming awesome. In.
So, yeah.
So did you play multiple sports or did you pretty much just focus on baseball?
Yeah. So San Diego, so I'm from San Diego, born and raised. Out there, pretty much, you have the rec leagues. I grew up playing baseball predominantly, through junior high, started playing flag football and basketball along with baseball. Mm-hmm. Then high school, that's when you get into the, you know, the main sports. So I played basketball, tackle football, baseball, and then I loved football, I loved baseball, but baseball, I saw there was more of a career with it, so decided to focus on that. Played in college, bounced around, trying to get the best opportunity for me, so I actually transferred. I played at three different schools and wrapped up here in Oklahoma. So went to start out at Biola University in Los Angeles, transferred, tried to walk on there. I was the last person cut my freshman and sophomore year, so it was kind of the heartbreak. I was trying to walk on, didn't have any scholarships, so transferred to Simpson University in Northern California, which I don't know if anyone's ever heard of that school, but it's a very small, small school in Redding, California, north of Sacramento. Played there and then ended up transferring out to Southern Nazarene out here in Oklahoma City.
After which that, also happens to be where I graduated from school, too.
It is funny because how, like, Oklahoma City is a big town, but you don't realize how small it's the town actually is.
Yeah, it's a small world.
Yeah. Just coming to the fact that, like, multiple people have come through our organization or through lessons that we know someone of someone, or we all went to the same school, or heck, like, I know you were there just prior to me and my wife going there, you know? So everyone just kind of misses each other by a year or two down the road, but... Yeah.
So then after SNU, you played some independent ball, right?
Yeah. So
how did you get into that?
Yeah, it was, as a senior in high school or senior in college, excuse me, graduating.
And what did you get your degree in, remind me?
It was multidisciplinary. I was one of those guys that had too many units. So they just kind of had to make up a degree for me.
Like a general liberal arts degree.
General. So I think there was communications. I went to private school, so there was some Bible in there, broadcasting, some science in there. So that was my degree.
Yeah. And then that's right, because you started with biology, right?
Yep. Started bio, switched to more into the kinesiology realm, and then realized that I couldn't be a baseball player and take chemistry and anatomy and all those tough classes.
Yeah, those are.
So that's when you take the easy route and go to communications.
Hey, that's all right. Yeah. No shame.
Yeah, exactly. And then so after college, you're always hopeful being a player. So watching the draft, hoping that my name was going to pop up, it didn't.
Yeah.
But I knew that I believed that I was good enough to play with some of those players. So so decided to attend every single open tryout there was across the country. Again, going back to, like, I don't know how my parents did it, but we flew out to many tryouts. I mean, heck, from New Jersey to Wisconsin to Texas to wherever it was, wherever I found a tryout, I attended. That was back
when. And what were your primary positions?
Primarily a catcher.
Yeah.
So primarily a catcher. I played a lot of positions, but yeah, catcher was my primary spot.
So what was your pop time?
So, I mean, on a really fast day, I think I got down to like 179, something in there. But, I mean, the average was probably 187, 19, somewhere right in there. Yeah. I mean, you know, catchers, that's what you got to work on. That's right. Man, you have no idea, but catchers open tryouts. Like, most of the time, you show up in a crowd of 30 catchers, and if you don't throw a pop time less than two, you don't even get asked to hit.
Right.
It's literally, hey, sorry, you're going home. So, attend tryouts, and then all around, I got my one yes in San Francisco area for independent ball for the Vallejo Admirals. They're in the Pacific Associations League up in the Bay Area. I think the team's still around. Played a season there, transferred out to the Freedom League. That league was based in Arizona, and then that league fizzled. So my baseball career, I was able to actually, the saddest moment in my life, I was released. And when I got released, I hated baseball, didn't want anything to do with it. Gave up baseball for a few years, worked a big boy job, lived in New York City, and then decided I want to get back into sports and fitness, and rest is history. Here we go.
Yeah. So take me through that down phase of baseball.
Yeah.
What were you struggling with the most as it related to, did you feel like dead gummit, my whole childhood was a waste? Or like, what? Well, I mean, what were some of the feelings that you were experiencing?
I mean, man, like when I was brought into the office, you know, it was during it was right before a game. They called me into the office, already suited up, like warm-ups are going on. Got called up into the press box, and the owner was just like, "Hey, Riley, unfortunately, you know, you're being released. We're bringing in another catcher to replace you. You know, that's it. Thank you so much. We'll get your last paycheck in the mail, all that stuff." And then from there, it was just like shattered, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
Having something so fun, being paid to do something you love, it was almost as if you were going through a bad breakup where it's like, oh, your whole love, your whole career, you see it as like long-term relationship, and then it explodes. Yeah. So I know guys cry, but let's just be real. I cried. All right.
Oh, yeah.
I cried.
My
whole
too.
World shattered. So packed up my stuff, just started my trek home. Everything, you know, loaded up in my Dodge Durango and drove home and called my parents, said, "Hey, I'll be home. I'll be home tonight." So, yeah, I hated baseball. It's just like anything that like leaves that sour taste in your mouth, and hated it. Didn't want anything to do with it. I just figured, hey, you know, this is the chapter's over. Time to get on with my life. Student loans started picking in, you know, all the payments started picking up.
Oh, man.
So quickly had to, you know, find something.
At what point in like your journey from SNU to independent ball, did you meet Katie, and how did y'all get together and then end up in New York City and all that?
Yeah. So, I actually met Katie. She was athletic trainer at Southern Nazarene University, where we both went to school. She was a couple years younger than me. She was in charge of the baseball team. So she was always in the dugout. I always tell my young players that girls are the devil. So if you're a young athlete listening to this, like, yeah, they can sidetrack you. But, you know, in the end of the day, like, you know, obviously fell in love with her. I've married her, all that stuff. But fun fact is she was a couple years younger than me. I actually – moved back to San Diego to pursue baseball, and I didn't want a long-term relationship, so we actually broke up for a few years.
Oh, did you really?
So, yeah, we broke up for a few years. We both went our separate ways, didn't talk at all. Played baseball. We did not keep in contact during that time.
Okay.
And then we randomly reconnected after the baseball career. We just randomly reconnected. And
Like randomly how?
And Katie could attest to this. Snapchat, you know, Snapchat.
Yeah.
So I was bored. Right. I was bored in a work conference, and I just randomly.
You
would have
been like an early adopter of Snapchat.
I'm that old, you know. I was bored in a conference, a work conference, and
that's funny.
I just took a photo. You know, if no one knows what Snapchat is, it's where you just send a picture and you know, you have your friends, and you just, you know, that's how you kind of spark conversation. So
I enjoy a lot of social media stuff, but I've never gotten on Snapchat.
Snapchat's weird because it's like you message someone either a photo or words, and then it disappears.
Right,
so there's a lot of, like, you could see kind of the spiral with that. Believe it or not, I took a picture and I like just like of the stage, and I sent it to her, and I was like bored in a conference, something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
And she ignored it.
Yeah.
But I saw she read it, but she ignored it. I think I sent her another one or something because I saw she read it. I was like, you know, just bored. You know how guys get.
Sure.
They just get bored. And like, she actually went off on me when I did it.
No
she was
way.
Like, you know, it was just funny. And then like,
who the heck do you think you are after
pretty
all
much,
these years?
Pretty much. And then I believe she like felt bad and she apologized, and then we kind of caught up from there. So
oh, that's great.
That's kind of how it is. You know, I like to say that time frame is a little foggy for me,
right,
but
right.
But hey, you know what? God works in weird ways, and
that's right.
I mean, yeah, we ended up selling the dust for me breaking her heart, and kind of went to randomly a long distance relationship without seeing each other for a while, and I moved to New York City. She moved to New York City. We just
And what did you move there for?
I worked in the corporate world for UPS, which they are a great employer. Loved my time there. I worked for them for started in their marketing department in San Diego, and then got promoted out there, and it was fun.
That's covered, awesome.
Yeah, New York City for a couple of years, and then
see, now marketing was my undergrad degree. Yeah, so nice. I got at SNU was marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So lived there a couple of years, and it was fun. It was a great time of life, but it was just time that our jobs weren't waking us up in the morning. It didn't excite us, so it was time to let it be and kind of switch careers.
You were out there, what, like two years?
Yeah, then? 2 years. Yep. Yeah. Pretty much 2 years on the dot, because it was pretty much right when our second lease got up. We jumped out and moved out.
So you packed it up and you came here to Oklahoma City.
Yep.
And that's when you started Riley?
I started training for personal training certification.
Oh, that's
right.
So I
moved in with her brother, actually, Katie's brother. You know, I was with her brother. I was his roommate with his wife, and then studied for certificated a personal trainer. Right from there, started personal training. She jumped into personal training as well. We worked at Gold's Gym for a couple of years, gained clientele, kind of learned the ropes of what fitness was. And then from there, decided to go out on our own.
Nice.
So we launched RSP, Riley Sports Performance, in 2020, the January, right before
COVID. Great time to launch a business that's dependent on in-person
Talk about stressful.
Golly.
We were lucky enough to have kind of a very reduced rent rate from the person that we were subleasing from.
Yeah.
So he was able to work with us on it. So we did not implode. We didn't have to fizzle. We were able to make things work. And then,
did you do like online classes and stuff like that for a while?
We tried that. So we had 2 months in person and then the whole world shut down. So we tried that. We sent all of our members, you know, workouts to knock out, try to keep everyone as close to us as possible. But
accountable and all
that. Yeah, accountable. But, I mean, let's just be real. The whole world is locked down. I don't think anyone was going to go in. There was no gyms to compete with us because everyone was at home.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to stay in touch with them as much as possible. And then from there.
Did you do some, like, outside stuff there for a little bit, too?
Yeah, we tried, you know, outside. You know, at the parks or even outside the building that we were at. Once, you know, the CDC kind of opened it up for everyone to get back to work.
Right.
At least with all the precautions. Man, what a strange time that was.
It was so bizarre.
Such a strange time.
Well, and we haven't gotten into this yet, but I'm a pastor. And I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point,
too. I'm very curious how that works.
That time as a pastor of trying to balance, you know, the needs of the people with the reality that, like, there's a lot of older folks in my congregation. Like, we couldn't put them at risk. And, like, no matter what decision we made, it was the wrong decision.
Absolutely.
Like there was no win. It was rough, but
I can't even imagine. I can't wait to get to that point. But, like, yeah, COVID was just a weird time frame.
It was.
Yeah, but we quickly got off the ground. We subleased for a while, and then
and you were in a different location before, right?
Yeah, we were right down the street at another physical therapy place. At ARC, which Sean, he's a great guy. He was able to kind of take us under his wing and sublease that space from him. We started in 2,000 square feet just running classes. And then I started baseball lessons across the street at a small private facility. And had a couple kids. And it just got to the point where we were kind of bursting at the seams and needed something different. And then we found a spot right down the street, which, I mean, I feel like we're at a better, busier location. So
yeah, this is a great spot.
Yeah, so now we're nestled inside of.
For those of you who are familiar with Edmond or Oklahoma City, we're at 15th and Kelly.
Yes, 15th and Kelly. Yep, just north of the Turnpike, right there. So we moved in. We started out with about 10,000 square feet, and then added on a second side. So I think we're right about 14,000 or 15,000 square feet right now. That's where we're at right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what brought me to this point in time right now. you know, quickly jumped into coaching. I love strength. I love everything that has to do with the human body. So I love all the personal training side of things, and getting people to the results that they need fitness wise and physically. It's fun now partnering it up with the baseball side. Yeah. So now, like, do you have any other questions on that?
Yeah. So, well, maybe not.
I'm sure they'll come up along the way.
We definitely, we got us to the point where you started performance baseball.
Yeah. And, so, I mean, do you want to switch gears? Let's jump to you, man.
We can trade roles here.
Yeah. So I know you're currently, a pastor right now.
That's right.
Yeah. If you want to.
I'm the pastor at Sunny Lane United Methodist Church in Dell City, Oklahoma. We live up here in Edmond, and like I had mentioned before, we used to live in the Dallas area, mm-hmm. and we moved up here after COVID, kind of as a reaction or result of COVID. We kind of took stock of our lives and was like, we want to be closer to our family up here. My wife has two sisters, and both of them were pregnant at the time.
Oh, wow.
And so we knew we wanted to be closer to them. It was going to be their first. And so we wanted to be in town and close to our nieces. And so we decided to move up here. We had been down there for 15 years before coming up here. So really, really glad to be back, mm-hmm. kind of close to family.
Yeah. So you said you graduated from Southern Nazarene University and you were down in Dallas for 15 years. What took you down there?
Seminary. Okay. So, I felt called to ministry when I was in high school. Really felt like that was the direction that, God was leading me to go. My dad thought, that's not a very lucrative career path there, son. So, you might want to just have some backup plans, which, is fairly wise. He encouraged me to get some other kind of degree besides theology and ministry in my undergrad before doing seminary.
And that's where the marketing came into play.
Exactly. So I kind of looked out at all of the possibilities of degrees, and I said, which one is the easiest and most fun?
There you go.
I did marketing. I also minored in music as well. I play the violin.
Nice.
And so I did a fun fact
I didn't know.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So played all 4 years of college. We, played there in the orchestra at SNU and still really enjoy playing. I'm not near as good as I was in college, but I do like to play.
Nice.
And so then, went to Perkins School of Theology at SMU, Southern Methodist University in Dallas. And that was just a really enriching time of my life, a really transformative time of my life.
Yeah.
Decided to join the United Methodist Church kind of in the midst of that. Really felt drawn to the ethos of grace and the emphasis on social justice and kind of being the hands and feet of Jesus and, kind of living out your faith in the neighborhood type thing. Nice. I really felt like the United Methodist Church lived that out really well. So became United Methodist.
Awesome.
And a lot of times you would, if you know you're going into ministry, you would try and run your ordination process in sync with your seminary process. But because I switched denominations after my seminary experience, I went to seminary and then did ordination, which was another 5-year process. It's actually quite difficult to get ordained in the United Methodist Church. There are
Why is that?
A lot of hoops to jump through. You have to start by applying through your local church to the district, and then you kind of do a round of interviews that take about a year. So there's like one interview, and then you got to wait a few months to go to the next one. And at each level, you kind of, you have to pass it in order to get moved on to the next level. And so then once you kind of make it, it's kind of like getting out of the minor leagues, almost like double A, triple A, major leagues or whatever. So, once you get past, the local level, then you go to the district level, then you go to like the regional level, which the United Methodist Church is called the conference. And so once the district kind of approves you, then you go, in front of the conference. And that's a really big interview. There was, I had to write about a 30-page paper on my theology and understanding of ministry, and then basically defend it in front of a committee of about 40 people.
That's wild.
And if you don't pass, you get kicked back down to the district level. And you have to try again.
And work back through it.
Work back through it. And so I passed on the first time on the front end. But then you go into what's called residency, or like a probationary type period for 2 years. And you meet with a cohort group and on a monthly basis. And like you have to be there. Like attendance is required. Mm-hmm. And you're constantly turning in papers for that too. You have to preach and record yourself and turn those kinds of things in. Like their vetting process is intense. So then you get to the end of those 2 years, and then you have to do another round of that same level of interview with the 40 people, and 30 pages. And basically you have to rewrite it, and show kind of what you've learned. And so on the front end, what you're showing is that you are ready for ministry. And then on the back end of that residency, you're showing that you are equipped and like ready to go.
And did you do all this? Did you have kids at the time?
Yes.
Oh my word.
Well, we, my wife and I got married really young.
Okay.
I was 22 and she was 20.
That's not too young, but
I mean, it was pretty young. We were on a 5-year plan, that lasted about 8 months.
I gotcha.
So 8 months after we got married, we found out we were pregnant. And so then a year and a half into our marriage, we had our first child. And that was during my first year at seminary.
Oh, wow.
And so during seminary, I worked 2 jobs and took full load
and had a master's newborn.
Level classes and had a newborn.
Learning, parenting, all of that. Man.
It was the most difficult season of life.
Absolutely. More power to you and your wife. Yeah. That's a wild story right there.
I will say it was the most difficult season of life that I'd been in until trying to lead a church during COVID.
it was
intense. And actually my last round of interviews to get ordained, I didn't pass the first time because we had just had Kai, our youngest, 2 weeks prior. And so I had no sleep. And I had to drive an hour to get to the interview. And I was just not on my game.
It wasn't your best time.
It was a bad day. And they were like, you know what? I think you probably need to wait another year and try again next year. So yeah, that's what you have to wait an entire year before you can try again. And I did have to make some minor adjustments to my papers and like talk to a few committee members and say like, okay, what can I do better? You know, that kind of thing. And so then I passed the last time. And so that was in 2018 that I got ordained. So it took, from the start of seminary, it took me 10 years.
Oh, wow.
11 years to get ordained.
Man. But you know what? Like, paths are always wild, but here you are now.
And like all of that, obviously, I feel like made me a better pastor, made me really make sure that I understood my own theology and how to make it applicable to real life. There's really no way around it other than to go through it, and it certainly made me be very well versed in a lot of different areas of, you know, theological understanding, and so for that I'm grateful.
It was time that that, you know, there was two pregnancies happening up here, and it was just time to move closer back to the family. I mean,
right.
What initially sparked you to come up here? I know you mentioned, you know, all those events.
Yeah. So, you know, I got appointed. Now the United Methodist Church, appoints its pastors. So that means, you don't go like interview for church jobs that are open in the traditional sense. Instead, like, your district superintendent knows what churches need pastors, and knows what pastors are available to be moved, and so on and so forth. And so you kind of interview with the DS, and then they tell you where to go.
Gotcha.
And you can say no.
Yeah.
But you can only say no so many times before they're like, well, then we don't have a spot for you.
Sure.
So,
but you were able to pick out like the Oklahoma area or the Oklahoma City or Edmond
basically,
area.
Yeah, I basically said, hey, we're looking to be closer to family. Our family's in Oklahoma City or in Edmond. So, you know, if I could be at a church that's within, you know, this certain circumference, we can make that work. And nice. I would love to be in a diverse context. And that's exactly where I ended up, you know.
That's awesome.
Del City is very diverse, and the church is too. And it's been a great place to be in ministry.
Nice.
So what kind of started it, like after COVID and being at that church where I was at, you know, it was, like I said, a difficult season of ministry.
Yeah.
And I love the people there, and I still think like we could have stayed in there, could have been a lot more that we could have done together. I have no doubt about that. Wonderful people. But we kind of made it through COVID, and it was tough, as it was on every pastor. I'm not saying that my situation was any harder than anybody else's. But we kind of made it through that, and then in February of 2021, there was a really bad winter storm that came through. You might remember because it hit up here too. And the power grid kind of failed.
Yeah, the whole
in
ice storm, right? Yeah, the whole ice. Yeah.
And our church had multiple water breaks throughout the whole facility that flooded the entire facility. And so we had to, just coming on the heels of starting to come back from COVID, our entire building got shut down again by this flood.
Yeah.
And we had to remodel the entire building. Like, it was a 100% remodel, new flooring, new walls, new paint,
water damage,
new
no
everything.
Joke.
Like,
man.
Yeah. New plumbing, all of that. And so I led the church kind of through that, and to be honest, I was exhausted.
Yeah,
I was like, I've got to have a change of scenery.
Yeah,
because these last 3 years have just been, really intense.
Yeah,
and so that coupled with, you know, COVID and us kind of feeling like we needed to reprioritize, and then my wife's sisters being pregnant and all of that kind of coalesced, and we were like, I think it's time. We'd been talking for 10 years about moving back to Oklahoma anyways, and so it was just a matter of timing.
Yeah.
It was also the year we were going to move, which ended up being the summer of 22, what it was going to be the start of my oldest high school. He was going into high school. He was going to be a freshman. My second was starting middle school. And my youngest was starting kindergarten. So, like, from a school standpoint, it was a very natural transition time as well.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, if we don't do it now, like, we could maybe do it in a couple of years. And then, like, that's halfway through Cadence High School, and we don't really want to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Wow.
So we ended up here.
It's funny how doors open, doors close, you know? And, like, I mean, it seems like as tough of a journey that was and how much you kind of had to go through, the fact that, you know, it was just all perfect timing. It seems like it was just a natural move. You were able to land, you know, in Del City, which is not too far from Edmond.
Right, right.
So, I mean, everything, you know, everything works out. And it's just one of those things, like, I think in always in an optimistic, you know, stance. And, I mean, as bad as situations get, you know, and as nerve-wracking and tiring it is, you know, like, it always works out in the end, more or less.
I do feel like this is where God wants us to be right now for this season of life. And I'm grateful to be here. And, you know, my commute is about 30 minutes. And there's hardly ever any traffic. Yeah. Like, compared to Dallas, the traffic up here is pretty light.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty easy to get around town. It's funny to hear people up here complain about traffic sometimes. I'm like, y'all have no idea. But with that, like, I kind of got back into listening to podcasts. And so I've been listening to a bunch of baseball podcasts, and I was like, you know what? There I think is still a little bit of an opportunity in that sphere for another coach's kind of player development podcast.
Yeah.
Because there are times when I go looking for you know, a podcast or discussion about some specific topics. I'm like, I'm not hearing it. Or you know, there, you know, a couple of the podcasts that I listen to, they're really good, but I also feel like they start to repeat themselves a little bit. And so I think, you know, there's all that to say. I think there's room for another baseball podcast.
Absolutely.
And so I'm excited to be part of this project.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the fact that our entire program is all about resources and, you know, helping athletes succeed, like, it's just the perfect timing to start a podcast to kind of branch out our reach and hopefully, you know, give you the resources that you need to succeed as well, whether you're a player or a parent or a coach. Hopefully we can hit on those items and, you know, give you at least some food for thought or give you some insight. Whether you're a veteran coach, a veteran player, or, you know, a brand new coach.
Yeah. You know, we talked about, kind of wanting to make a resource available to our coaches internally. And you had kind of done some projects like that in the past with YouTube and other things. We thought, well, maybe this would be a medium that would work as well for some of our performance baseball coaches. And you know, if it helps out some coaches beyond that, then, you know, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me ask you this real quick. Going back to, like, your whole story, being a pastor, being a coach, I mean, the one thing that I would love to, you know, get some insight on and just kind of see, you know, just – We're both believers. I want to know, like, what do you use? How do you use your platform as a coach and connect it? Like, how do you connect coaching and being a pastor to your players?
Yeah. Well, I definitely care for and love my players. And the parents too. Like, I do feel like in some way they're part of my just pastoral responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, we had one kid that I found out recently that, you know, his mom passed away. And so, you know, as a coach, I know I'm going to have regular interactions with him. And I'm really grateful that as a pastor, I can lean on some of that training to try and be as caring for him as possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, from like a caring for my players standpoint, I do think being a pastor really helps. From like a theological standpoint, my mantra of believe, trust, win, I think has some theological groundings that I don't know that I fully processed, but I think for kids, they need to know that that they are loved, and I think one of the and that they are gifted and special and they belong. And I think one of the ways that we can do that is by building belief in themselves.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noticed with one of my boys is he really struggles with anxiety. And he gets really down on himself. Not surprisingly, in ways that I used to get down on myself, right? It's like, oh, I see where that's coming from. I know exactly where that's coming from. And so I see it in him. And so like, I know, obviously, there are other kids that probably deal with similar issues. And so it's like, I want to instill in him and there, and by extension, the rest of my players, a sense of belief in themselves and some mechanisms and strategies for collecting your thoughts and breathing. And there, I think there is a lot of connection between Christian spiritual practice of taking some deep breaths and meditative work that we do in our Christian spiritual lives, or at least I think you should do in, our, in your Christian spiritual life, that helps you collect yourself, you know, recognize that this isn't the end of the world, that I can move forward despite struggles. And then from, you know, from a trust standpoint, you know, the second point of my mantra or whatever, I think ideally that's what we're doing in churches too, right? We're building a community of trust and of encouragement, of, you know, I'm here for you, you're here for me, type environment. And so I think that's part of it. And then winning the next pitch for me is like that resilience, practicing that resilience through things like COVID, through things like, you know, whatever it is, you might be the loss of a loved one, the loss of a baseball career.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, practicing those things, as a kid and learning how to, have positive self-talk and be able to move through the pain. I think is something that we, I mean, that's a that's a spiritual act, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, just going to your second point, you know, as far as community, I mean, like I said, we're, you know, we're both believers in like the fact that like we're not supposed to do life alone. You know, we're not supposed to do life alone. We need a community around us. And I think that's what, you know, I grew up playing sports, and like the fact of the matter is that all the majority of team sports, you have to come together as a community.
Yeah.
You have to come together as a community, or else, I mean, then there's no team chemistry. There's no camaraderie. You're not going to trust the player next to you. So to hammer on that, like, community is huge, and having that trust in one another, understanding what, you know, what it really means to be a teammate or a friend or whatever it is, you know, is just so valuable, to ingrain in these young athletes. It's a huge aspect.
All right. Well, this has been a good first conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Did you have any loose ends that you wanted to?
Not really. I think we'll definitely start diving in. Like our next episode, we're going to be talking about coaching philosophy, how to set up team values, expectations, and just overall getting buy-in from players. So I'm really looking forward to that. You know, as far as just building that coaching philosophy, it, like we said, starting this podcast, we want to give resources. And I think if you don't have a coaching philosophy or a set of values, you know, this next episode will definitely help you out with that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's really important to kind of have some guiding principles that – give your team some direction.
Yeah.
Because if you don't set out, I think, to intentionally write those things down, and figure those things out ahead of time, you will unintentionally institute some things that maybe you didn't want and have some adverse effects related to that. So definitely tune in for episode 2.
Absolutely. We'll see you there.
All right. This is fun, Josh.
All right. See you on the next one.